from the camera. Well, good evening. I sure was glad to hear there's a few raindrops. I hope it rained on my little half acre there that I'm trying to grow something on tonight, because I was sure needing it, and I know you were too. Tonight we're going to talk about how to have the abundant life by following the Lord's directions in our home and family. Our lesson text is from the book of Colossians chapter 3. And I especially want to home in on verses 18 through 20, but I'd like to get a running start with you. Sometimes we treat the Bible kind of like it was a law book, and it certainly contains the perfect law of liberty, as James tells us as he writes, but it is written in the form of a letter, the Colossian letter particularly, and most of the other epistles. That's why they have that name. They're a letter. And this was a letter that Paul wrote to the church at Colossae. Paul had never been in Colossae, as far as we know. But he has heard about this congregation there, and he's heard of some situations that he believes needs to be addressed. And so while he's under house arrest in prison, waiting to go before Caesar, he writes several letters, and this is one of them, to this church. And as he did in the letter to the Ephesians, which we studied just a week or so ago, with a more detailed description of how the roles of husband and wife and father and children and mother and all that works together. Here it's in a shorter form, but he does emphasize some things that are going to be worthy of our time, I know, tonight as we look at this. And as I said a moment ago, I'd like to kind of take a running start. And as you think of this as being a letter written by a man who loves the Lord, loves the church, is basically giving his life, his all for it and for the spread of the gospel. And he loves these Christians, and he wants to help them with some situations where they need some further understanding. And we need it also. So let's start together in verse 12 and work down through verses 18, 19, and 20. And we'll draw some particular observations as we get to talking about the roles, particularly of husband and wife after a while. Starting in verse 12, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved." Do you think of yourself that way? The elect? Now, it's not because of any goodness in us. The goodness is all in Christ and in God the Father. But he sees us because of Jesus and the price he paid on the cross for us. We have been given the identity of Christ's followers. He sees Jesus when he looks at us. So we therefore are the elect and holy and beloved. We are set apart. We're different. Here's what he says you need to do. Now, y'all got dressed for church. I'm glad you did. You look nice. When I first got up out of bed this morning, looked in the mirror, I scared myself. I forgot how bad I was, how bad I looked. And then, as I said this morning, I have to remember that I've been standing before folks and preaching like this for 60 years, so I guess that might show some wear. And it does. But I did the best I could with what I got left, and you all did too, and you look good. Well, now, Paul says spiritually you need to get dressed. And here's what he says you need to do. Put on tender mercies. When you come to church, bring tender mercy. When you go home, take tender mercy with you. Mercy goes a long, long way. You may have heard about the fellow that was back in those days, they did church directories. By the way, if you don't have access to the one on the internet, you let Patty know and she'll run you off a copy. She did that for three or four people here tonight, and we'll do it for some more if you need it. So you can have access to that stuff also. But used to, you had to come and sit. A lot of y'all do that. Come and sit in front of the photographer, and then they put the hammer lock on you and sell you $200 or $300 worth of pictures. Yeah, we all did all that too. Okay, well, this fellow's looking at these pictures and, "Mama, I don't think this picture does me justice." She says, "Honey, you don't need justice, you need mercy." That's the way I am. We all need mercy. Mercy is like the oil in a machine that makes everything run smoothly. He says, put on tender mercies and kindness. Christians ought to be the kindest people in the world because they understand how kind God has been to us. He gives us immeasurable kindness that we do not deserve. But as he lavishes that on us, you remember the unforgiving servant? He owed the master $10 million, and the master was going to throw him in jail for having such a debt. And back in that day, that's what they did. Boy, the jails would be full today, wouldn't they? And he couldn't pay his debt. And he begged the master, he said, give me time and I'll get it paid. Well, if I owed you $10 million, you might as well forget it. I can't get that much money. He couldn't either. And the master felt sorry for him and forgave him the whole thing. And he went out and grabbed another servant by the neck and said, pay me what you owe me. He owed him about a month's wages. And he threw him in jail and made everybody else feel so bad about how he'd acted after he'd been forgiven so much. You remember that? And the master ended up calling him back when he found about it, and he threw him in jail until he paid it all, because he had not shown that kind of tender mercy that needs to be in kindness. Notice these words. Here's what should identify a Christian. Have you ever seen nasty Christians? Most churches have some nasty Christians. I have not met a one at Healy Bend. I just want you to know that. I hadn't met you if you're here, okay? All right. But now some churches, nearly everyone I've ever been to, had some mean folks. I mean, they'd sing, oh, how I love Jesus. You know what I mean? Listen, Christians need to be known for tender mercies, kindness, humility. Take all these things home. Oh, I'll tell you what, it'll stop so many fights you wouldn't believe it. Christianity needs to work best at home. Did you know that? Until you practice on it good at home, you're not going to be any good at church or out in the neighborhood. You need to get it working there. That's why God put the two of you together, so different as you are, is so you both would grow up. You see, what you have is two sinners trying to figure out how to please Jesus. And we get a lot of practice. We get a lot of practice. Tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long suffering. Jerry Barber, a friend of mine, here's the way he says this word. He starts over here. Long suffering. Because that's the way it feels sometimes. Long suffering. You got to suffer long. And that's what he says in 1 Corinthians 13, isn't it? Love suffereth long and is kind, right? That's what it is. That's what I have to be. If I'm going to be a Christian, this is what a Christian's like, okay? Bearing with one another. We got to get along. If we're going to go to heaven, we're going to have to learn to get along here. Otherwise, one and maybe both of us ain't going to make it. It's for people that have learned to bear with one another. You don't get your way. You don't get your way all the time. You might not ever get your way. You have to work things out together. You have to come to a conclusion. At other times, Paul will say, be of the same mind. How do you get there? Well, one of you has to change your mind. Hopefully, both of you will, and you'll come to something in the middle. Bearing with one another, forgiving one another. Do you have to do any forgiving in marriage? Boy, do you ever. Do you have to do any forgiving to get along at church? You sure do. How do you get along with your neighbors? Heard about this one person. They moved into this new neighborhood and moved right beside a wise old granny. And they were getting to know each other just a little bit. And the new neighbor asked the granny, said, well, what's this neighborhood like? How do these people, can you get along with these people in this neighborhood? And granny said, well, how did you get along with the ones where you came from? And said, well, however that was, that's about how it'll be here. You see, it's more about you than is anybody else. That's the way it works. That's the way it works. Forgiving one another. And if anyone has a complaint, do you want to be in charge of the complaints? We're looking for someone here at Neely's Bend that will be in charge of all the complaints. You get all the complaints. What are you hiding for, Joy? He doesn't want the job. He doesn't want the job. No, I don't blame him. I don't blame either. All right. Anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you. There we go, right back to that same concept. So you also should do. Is that what he said? They used another word. Must do. Right? Must do. That's a hard one. Must. You like the must do's? My dad had a lot of must do's. And if you didn't do them, you wished you had. This is a must. You must forgive. You can't get to heaven without forgiving people. Do you know that? And above all these, Paul, you're pretty demanding, aren't you, of these poor folks? Well, they're going to have to act like Jesus all the time, the way you're going here. Above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. It's that glue that just keeps it all together. Y'all using that newfangled kind of glue they got? I went into the hardware store here a while back. I use things until they're unusable. That's just, I don't know why you'd think I grew up in the Depression. My folks did, and they knew about it. My grandfolks did, and they wouldn't throw away anything. And Patty would tell you it's awful hard to get me to throw away stuff. I'll glue shoes together. I wear a size 15 shoe. I wore a 14 for lots of years, and the shoe specialist would tell me, now one day, John, you're going to start wearing a 15. What happens? That foot just flattens out more and more and more. It's not real easy to find 14 shoes or 15 shoes. I find them a few times. When I find a good pair, Patty see these awful looking shoes I got at home, and she says, you gonna throw them out? No, I went down to the store and I bought me some shoe glue, and I put those suckers back together. They cost the arm and leg. I complained. I'd put my foot into a 12 for lots of years, and this member of the church fitted shoes for people that had problem feet, children that were born with club feet and things like that. He would fit those special kind of shoes, and he would do regular stuff too. Well, I'd come into him, and he'd put me in 14s. And I was complaining about the cost of these things. And he says, John, you got to remember, they got to kill two cows before they start making your shoes. Well, anyway, I buy this glue, and I found I can put anything together with that glue. I fixed my glasses. Now, I don't have them with me tonight because I don't need them anymore. But I fixed my glasses with those shoes. I stepped on those glasses, and I put them back together with that shoe glue. One time, got my new teeth, I had the healing set in there, and I broke a tooth off. And it was the weekend, and I'd called the dentist off, or what do they call the fellow that does these fancy teeth? I called him and said he was closed, but I said, well, I've got some shoe glue here. I can put it back myself. He called me back and says, John, you come on in. When you mentioned shoe glue, I knew I had to come. But I could have fixed it. I know I could. Well, love is that super kind of glue that if it's there, that's what makes mamas act like they do. You can't hardly make a mama not like you. Did you ever try? I never tried. I liked my mama to like me. Nothing made me feel worse than to think she was upset with me. And Patty pulls that one on me too. I want her happy with me all the time. And so I'll do a lot of this stuff it talks about up here just to keep her liking me. Put on love, which is the bond of perfection. It's just as good as it's going to get. It's super glue. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts. You know what? If you're getting along like this, if you're forgiving one another, if you're being kind to one another, if you're trying to outdo the other with politeness and with kind deeds, that's a great competition to get into. And it's just so peaceful. Remember me telling about I had a bunch of retired folks in a vacation Bible school class. I don't remember which service I told this, but I remember telling this here. And we'd been married about 35 years, I guess, at the time. And so while I had a bunch of these folks been married 50 years plus, I asked them, what's it like after 50 years? And this one old fellow who was our janitor, and he was just as sweet a guy as he could be, just as kind and always fixing everything, and he never talked. But he reared back, clear as he throat, Brother John, it just gets real mellow. Listen, you go living like this, and your home life is going to get to be a piece of heaven. It really will. You can find that abundant life that Jesus promised you'd have if you just keep the rules, if you just follow his plan. It's not hard. It just takes effort, patience. And now let the peace of God rule in your hearts, which also you were called into one, to which you also were called into one body. Now he's going to bring the church in here, you see, and be thankful. Can you be thankful? Was that not some dinner today? Wasn't that wonderful? And seeing all those grandkids, that was just beautiful. Wasn't that beautiful? Oh, I just thought it was fantastic. Y'all worked so hard, did so good. That food was good. I cabbaged some up for tonight, and I just ate it. I'm trying to stay awake now. But it was so good. Wasn't it fun? Being a Christian's fun. It really is. It's the abundant life. Now, you've heard this verse before, but notice where it is. It's right here in this section when he's talking about how, as God's elect, holy and beloved, how I got dressed for church and for life. I put on all these things. I'm different than I used to be. I didn't used to act this way. I used to be mean and nasty, and I decided I'd be sweet and nice. And it's a decision. You can make it. Happiness is a choice. It is a choice. Unhappiness is a choice. Tom T. Hall, the great philosopher, had a song one time, and it had a phrase in it that said, "You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd." You ever hear that song? But you can be happy if you have a mind to. You can. Listen to what he says. "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, in all wisdom." You've got some wisdom now about life. You understand some things you didn't understand before about what it's going to take to get along, what it's going to take in order to have true happiness in your home, in your life, in your neighborhood. "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly." And it is. It's such wonderful. We call it the bread of life. Jesus says, "Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." It's a filling spiritual food. It matures us. It turns us into the likeness of Jesus. "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing." You can't keep it in. You can't keep it quiet. It's going to bust out on you. One time, I'm trying to remember, it was Isaiah or Jeremiah. I believe it's Jeremiah, fire in my bones. He got so upset, he got so discouraged at church that he just wanted to go off and run a motel somewhere. "And I'll just not preach anymore." But he said, "I found I couldn't do it. There's a fire in my bones and it was going to come out." When you keep feasting on the word of God, when you keep letting Jesus guide your life, when you let yourself be filled with the Spirit, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom," you're going to start teaching. You can't keep from it. You're going to start encouraging. That's what the word admonish means. You're going to encourage the kids. You're going to encourage the grandkids. That was a lot of what we talked about this morning. We talked about why grandparents are so grand. They understand some of these things. And they'll use it to help those children grow. But here it's also going to talk about our worship. Admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Now, you know what the psalms are. The psalms that are in the Bible, that was the Hebrew songbook. Hymns, that's hymns like "How Great Thou Art." They're songs that glorify God. The spiritual songs, that's songs we sing where we encourage one another, like "Trust and Obey." Songs like that where we are encouraging each other in our Christian life. We'll do all three of those. Psalms, hymns, spiritual song, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. "And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God." That's the second time thanks has been brought up in all this. Thanksgiving. Can you be thankful for serving Jesus? You sure better be. Nobody has it better than Christians. Nobody else has the peace of God ruling in their heart. "Giving thanks to God the Father through him." Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter against toward them. And children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Well, why did God tell wives to submit to their husbands? Because everything has to have some kind of order and some kind of direction and some kind of leadership and some kind of fellowship. And God first made the man. Paul talks about this another time. God first made the man, and then he made the woman to be his helper, his suitable helper. And so if he made the man and he wants him to lead, he wants his wife to submit to his leadership. We talked about this here some time ago. A lot of times when I'm helping someone learn how to do open Bible studies with someone that needs to come to Jesus, I'll take them with me and let them see what I do and let them kind of get a feel for how to go about one of these studies. And then we may have another study, and I may step back and say, you lead the study, and I'll be here, and I'll be your helper. And so that's all it is. It's not who's more valuable. They're both of equal value. We're going to find that in Scripture. God regards both of them of equal value. But there has to be, like a football team, there has to be a quarterback. They can't everybody be quarterbacks. And there has to be a center and all the other. Every position's important. And the same in the home. Every position's important. We talked about this just a little bit the other day. What does a godly woman do then as the wife and mother in the family? Well, number one, she orders her life according to God's priorities. This is the way he assigned it. This is what he wanted. She's going to be growing in a relationship with God first, and she's going to be supporting her husband, because that is the role that she's been giving. She's going to be helping teach and train the children. Those are the roles she has in life. And she's going to order all the other things about her life around God's priorities. And that way the home functions in the best possible way. A deserving woman will choose God's design rather than yielding to outside worldly influences. She will intentionally pursue the relationship with God first. And she will spend regular time reading her Bible. She'll spend regular time in prayer. She will be involved in the local church. She'll be teaching in the Bible program when she's able to do that. She's going to work with other ladies. Paul instructs older women to teach the younger women how they are to carry on their responsibilities at home and in the family. And she's going to reach out to ladies and be a great support to them. And she will be there supporting her husband. Remember, a number of weeks ago, we looked at Proverbs chapter 31, a worthy woman who can find, you remember? And one of the things that we found about her was she was such a great help to her husband that he was one of the leaders in the town. He was respected at the city gates. We've talked before about that was the place where government was done. She's also going to understand that, as the Lord said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. And that's exactly what she is. And her life is reflected in him and in the children, and she is the heart of the home. That is the role that he has given her. So she has this helper. And that doesn't mean she's less. It may mean she's more. Tom complained to me tonight. He couldn't get used to me not wearing my glasses, and I had a pair with me. I reached in to put them on. I said, no, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. Do you know why I can see like this? I had a helper. He's a very skilled eye surgeon. He was my helper. He helped me see like this. And my wife is like that. She's my helper. I wouldn't be here and be anything like what I am if it were not for that lady. Listen, she preached to me all week long to help me preach to you. All right? Okay. And she's my best critic. She'll tell me how I did, and she don't care whether I like it or not, because she's the Lord's lady. And she's going to do what the Lord wants, and the Lord wants me spanked once in a while. And she can do it in just about 30 seconds. You know what I mean? Because I just trust her so much, and I just lean on her so much. A man's pride and ego is about like a paper cup. And you girls, you hold it in the palm of your hand. And you can crush him and make him a clown, or you can build him up, encourage him, correct him where he needs it, and you can make him a king. Adam needed Eve really, really bad. He needed a lot of help. God said so. So This is going to be her role. And again, let me say what Paul says in Galatians chapter 3 and 26. There's neither Jew nor Greek. There's neither bond nor free. There's neither male nor female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus. It's not one better than the other in any way whatsoever. And she will actively work at being the best wife that she can be. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 1. The wise woman builds her house, but a foolish one tears it down with her own hands. I've seen that happen many, many times. I'll show him a thing or two. Yes, she does. She literally destroys the house herself. There are women that turn their husbands into clowns. And there's others that support them and help them and make them grow. Her marriage is her most important human relationship. The relationship that takes priority over all the other relationships with the children, with other family members, with friends. Husband's going to be number one for her because that's the job God gave her from the very beginning. That's what he made her for. She's going to be helping other young women learn how to build up their husbands. Theodore Roosevelt made this statement. The mother is the one supreme asset of the national life. She is more important by far than the successful statesman or businessman or artist or scientist. Her biblical priority is near the heart of God, making her home what God wants it to be, as wife, as mother, and eventually as grandmother. Strong women demonstrate love for their husband by respecting and supporting them. That's the role God has given them. And every man is longing for a wife that will respect and support him, whether he deserves it or not. And a lot of times, down inside us guys, we know we don't really deserve it. We pointed out when we talked about this last week that there is no king and there is no queen in this house except King Jesus. And both of us, we're the Lord's slaves. We're his servants. And it's not up to me to make her do her part. It's my job to do my part before my king. And I will not be judged on whether she does her part. She will not be judged on whether or not I do my part. I will be judged on whether or not I do my part. And I can't wait for her. She can't wait for me. You each do your job whether the other one does or not. This will empower that family and that home in a wonderful, wonderful way. It is an unconditional kind of love. Just as God has for us an unconditional kind of respect, he doesn't have to earn it, but he'd better. Or he's going to answer to his father-in-law. She's a child of God. And Peter, he actually makes that statement, and Peter's a married man. Peter says that if you don't treat your wife with understanding as the weaker vessel, your prayers will be hindered. God won't even listen to you. Hey, I can't get by a day without the Lord's help. So I had better treat her right. In his eyes, I better have treated her right. So she respects her husband's authority. She looks to him for leadership, and she expects him to give it. A lot of times you run into problem that guys don't do their part. Laying on the couch watching football and not thinking about what's really important. Well, our job is a lifelong job, and at the end, there's a judgment day. With kind words, with words of gratitude and words of praise, she can encourage that man and help him grow and lead him in the direction that he needs to go. Guys, I really think ladies naturally are equipped to do their part in the marriage emotionally better than we are. Paul talks to husbands this way in Ephesians. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. And he who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. That's your job, guys. Nourish her and cherish her. The biggest question in her heart is, what do you think of her? And you can make her a queen, or you can make her a slave girl. It's kind of up to you. Just as Christ loves the church, just as Christ cares for the church, that's my job. My model is Jesus. I need to cherish her. She needs to feel cherished. I need to give her every reason to trust me, to depend on me. She never has to wonder about what I'm doing or where I am. She doesn't need to ever have to wonder about whether or not financially we're going to be safe, or physically whether she's going to be safe. Paul says, he who will not provide for his own is worse than an unbeliever and has denied the faith. With Paul's warning and with Peter's warning, guys, God's asking a lot of you. God means for you to grow. He doesn't want you to stay like you were when you got married. He wants you to mature and quit being a boy and start being a man. Here's Peter's words again. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives with an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. It is my job as the Lord's servant to care for my wife, my family, my children before I do myself. That's what I'm all about. And that's what you need to be all about. There isn't anybody that's given more of themselves to you than your wife. And every day, you need to make her thankful that she did. You must courageously lead your wife. You need to lead her in spiritual ways. You need to lead her in physical ways. You are to be the leader. You don't know what to do? You better be praying. You better go to be looking for some godly men who you've seen be the kind of leader that you know you need to be. Learn from them. Let them help you. When you are the kind of husband you need to be, when you take the initiative in the family and rearing the children and caring for the house, and taking care of your wife, it's just a sweet, beautiful music among the kids and with your wife. And she needs to be the absolute best friend and confidant you'll ever have. When I talked to Woody and I let him tell me about how he feels about his wife still, you can tell y'all had a great marriage, didn't you, Woody? You really did. You really did. And that wasn't by accident. You both intended to, didn't you? You both intended to. And he's pointing upward. God helped him. I may have told you this. I can't remember. But it's one of those things that means so much to me. I was a pretty young preacher, I guess, in my 20s. I was in my 20s. And in the congregation I was preaching for, one of our elders was a pretty stern kind of fella. And he would lead singing. And I had a visitor one time ask me, what's wrong with the song leader? Was he a Marine? Because that's the way he led singing. Oh, 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 oh. The only time I ever saw this guy tender was when he's with his wife. And she was crippled. She wasn't able to get around all the time. And he all the time was opening the door for her and helping her out of the car. And when those two eyes met, you could just see both of them. They just had deep love for one another. And it was their 50th wedding anniversary. And I was there. And I had the same smart mouth I have now, maybe a little worse. And I said to her, her name was Gainel. I said, Gainel, how have you put up with that awful man all these years? She looked right at me and she got a big smile on her face and said, I aimed to. You got to aim to, don't you, Woody? You got to aim to. I'm going to brighten the corner where I am. I want our home to be the happiest home in the neighborhood. You can do it. You can do it. God's way really, really works. The kids are affected by all this. When they see a mom and dad that really love each other, you're modeling for them what they're going to go out looking for when they get ready to get married. And you want to make sure you let them see that tender side. Don't be fighting in front of the kids. Settle your differences behind closed doors. Come out with a plan both of you can support. That may not be exactly what either of you want, but it's what both of you can support. And that's the way you lead the children. That's the way you lead the family. And all these principles we've been talking about in these earlier verses here, oh, how they help. Oh, how they help. Well, if I ever do it as good as I preach it, I'll be near perfect. But Pat, I can tell you I got a long way to go. Don't we all? Don't we all? But you know, if you keep aiming there, you'll get a little better, and you'll get a little better, and you'll get a little better. I had an experience one time that helped me learn that I could grow. My family had been a history. We all had music in our family, and we all had been in the high school band. And my turn came. Well, my dad had played a clarinet, but I got these big old farmer hands, milking dairy cattle like this every day, twice a day, will change your hands. And a clarinet has little bitty keys. And my big old fumble fingers weren't very good. I was always third clarinet last chair. And I went into high school that way. And we had two good tuba players. They both graduated the same year. The music instructor came to me and says, John, you've got big hands and a big mouth. Would you play a tuba if I'd teach you? So I started out learning the oompa, oompa, oompa. And it's a long way from a reed instrument to a brass instrument and that big old mouthpiece. And instead of all these keys, you just got three. And you got to learn different combinations to make different notes. And so I didn't feel like I was doing any good at all. And he says, John, you're doing fantastic. You're doing wonderful. Well, I didn't feel that way at all. But then since he thought I was, I got to think maybe I'm doing better than I thought I was. And I ended up being a tuba player that some of the other bands, when they heard me, said, we wish we had him. They told some of the other members, we wish you had your tuba guy. And because I'd learned it. Oompa, oompa, and I like to make that thing crack and just bounce off of the stadium back into the sound. If you hit it really hard, it would do that. You can grow too. We all can. You got to try. You need to find a good teacher. Jesus is the best. And look for folks that can encourage you who've already been there. They can help you too. Well, tonight, I need Jesus, and so do you. Are you a Christian? Is your life where it needs to be? We're going to sing an invitation song here. And if you need to come for any reason, if you need to be baptized into Christ, we're ready to help you with that, just as Jesus instructed. If you want to be restored, if there's a problem in your life or something you'd like for us to pray about with you, or if we can help you in some other way, that's what we're here for. We're here for one another, just like we've been studying. Won't you come while together we stand to sing?